Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Alexis.
Oh, we have a returning cast member here.
Mm-hmm.
Alexis Jones, I guess, would be your last name in the canon of Better Cast Saul.
In the canon of Bald Move, yeah, sure.
Yeah. We're back. Season 6 has aired its first two episodes. We're back to talk about the first one here. We're going to do another podcast releasing the same day for the second one, and this is for posterity, for back catalog people who are like, but I've only seen the first episode.
We did it for you.
Yeah. So, with that in mind, let's get into episode one. Alexis, I almost said Aaron, because I'm so used to throwing the Aaron here.
Alexis, it's my beard. It's very confusing,
that
I understand.
Too, yeah. What'd you think of episode one only? Don't you dare talk about episode two.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure. Okay. I think we are already seeing a lot of groundwork being laid for the rest of the season, just right off the bat.
Yeah.
And also a very beautiful montage at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
which I totally loved.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Jimmy being Jimmy at the end of the episode, which I also love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I'm a happy camper.
One of the big reasons I tune into this show is just to watch Jimmy be Jimmy.
And
I was a little worried, like, coming out of the last season that we might not see as much Jimmy being Jimmy, but it does feel like, based on these first two episodes, or maybe the first episode alone is all you need, perhaps, that we are going to see plenty of Jimmy being Jimmy, but it's going to be almost like at the end of a gun, right? Like,
yeah.
Kim almost is forcing him into this now, which is super weird.
But it is a really interesting dynamic
to
have her be more of the driving force behind the Slip and Jimmy stuff.
Yeah, and she's very good at it still.
Oh, so good at it.
But like, yeah, it's just different. But it's still, he's still, you know, when he's in the con, he's still on the ball. So I'm enjoying every second of it. And this is a particularly good one, I'd say. And it's the long con too. This is the thing. I feel like in season five, we get a semi long con. Like, we're warming up to this, which is going to be the full on season of Connie Howard, but with the Acker stuff, I felt like all that stuff was like a medium length con.
Definitely. And that was also a little bit more of Kim getting her feet wet in more serious ploys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being okay with it.
Completely in the pool, splashing around. And it's wild.
Yeah. Just like playing with cutouts and it's a whole situation.
I really did like this episode. Elements of this episode. I do think it's a setup episode.
It is. Like, 100%.
You got to take it with a grain of salt. You got to say, okay, this, you know, isn't the most exciting stuff. Like, watching Nacho run north for 20 minutes of this and the next episode, another like 30 minutes of that episode.
I was tempted to skip forward a little bit in Nacho scenes, but it was worth it just to see a very powerful slide that Michael Mando executes in his first scene. I enjoyed that a lot.
But the best parts for me were clearly this opening montage, which we'll talk about in a second, and then the con stuff happening with, what is it, Howard and Cliff in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
And I think the Gus stuff is going to be exciting. Just like, we kind of know where this stuff ends up, right? With Juan and Hector and all that stuff. But it's exciting to see them connect the dots, because it always felt like, how are they going to get to this place where these particular things are set up this way? And I think they've done a really good job.
I do feel a little bit bad. It seems like Gus just lives in the chicken trailer now.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate for him. But also, I think he's afraid for his life.
I think Lyle got a promotion. Because Gus is always out.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Or did he get fired after, like, not scrubbing that fryer correctly? I know he didn't, but
considering that fryer also doesn't exist anymore now,
he's
probably fine.
Oh, Lyle's sitting home collecting unemployment.
Yeah, boy. Or he's working at
socks
another location.
Underwear. Yeah, probably.
Probably just moved him. Mm-hmm. What about socks and underwear? Oh, sitting in his socks and underwear. Mm-hmm. Thought you were implying you got paid in socks and underwear. That was weird.
In Los Pollos uniforms.
Yeah.
Apparently,
definitely.
He lived in those. Anyway, so that's what I thought. Pretty good episode, but a lot of setup, and some of it wasn't the most thrilling stuff in the world.
But you know it was? This amazing opening montage. This
highly
choreographed group of people packing up a Saul Goodman's house. Let's talk about that.
Okay, let's take a quick break first, though.
getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret, Hush Hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, yeah, let's talk about it. What happens?
There is... Shall I list them? There's a kaleidoscope of ties. There is a Trump toilet. There is...
Yes, that's all I could think about watching this scene. I was like, oh my God, this is just Trump's house, Trump's apartment in New York.
Yeah, but somehow it's more tasteful because at least there's some color, right? It's not just white and gold.
Some natural materials.
Yeah. All painted, by the way. All that marble, painted by hand, by the art department. Huh. Incredible.
No real marble was harmed in the making of this episode?
Interesting way to put it, but yes, no real marble was harmed. It was recreated.
The other thing I was thinking was Scarface. When I saw this circular bed and like...
Oh, yeah.
The just the palatial bathroom. I don't know. Scarface has a weird house.
Sorry, that's news to me. Yeah. I haven't seen... Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen Scarface. You can make all your noises. Okay, done. Let's move on.
There was just so much to take in.
There was. In this scene. There was.
Like there are a lot of Easter eggs in here. Like if you look at the things that they're collecting, and a lot of things they don't collect. Like in the closet, I saw. Okay, they're collecting all these shoes and clothes and stuff, and obviously, Saul's clothes are ridiculous. But he's got the pair of walking shoes that he gifted to, or he had a ton of them, right? He had a whole trunk full of these things.
He had a whole trunk full because he didn't know her size. Right. Yeah, from a previous season where he scammed an old lady.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
So that was there. Not so much an Easter egg, but there's like Viagra and just like a shitload of vitamins, prescription pills. He apparently was in poor health to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine. I can't imagine his nerves were amazing those last few years.
No.
Being a friend of the cartel and all that shit.
Being a friend of Walter White.
Being a friend of Walter White, yeah. Dear God. Apparently, this scene is so difficult that the production team felt the need to hire dance choreographers to actually choreograph this scene. That's kind of
interesting.
Amazing.
There is kind of a flow to it. Yeah,
there is a flow,
if you watch it.
It's pretty satisfying.
The camera moves along with all the people moving in particular ways to show certain things off. Yeah, it's interesting. I thoroughly enjoyed just looking through everything that was going on. There are a couple things that I think might be important later, like that little black book that they find.
Yeah, right?
I couldn't really tell what was in it. It looks like just a bunch of scribbles. That's probably just Saul's handwriting, but like, I wonder if that's going to come back to incriminate other people or something. But like, everybody at that point is dead, right? Because this is, let's be clear, this is a flash forward, right?
Right. We did not get treated to a black and white jean scene at the very beginning of this episode.
Which is the biggest change from every past season where we had an opening jean scene.
Yep.
Which to me says they're probably going to be doing more jean stuff toward the end of this season.
That's what I suspect.
We might even end on it.
And I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous about it. I don't know why.
All right.
I'm nervous to see Saul Goodman's final steps.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It'll be fun, I'm sure. There's obviously, they zoom in on this one so everybody knows what's up, but the Zafiro Añejo stopper is in the gutter.
Yes, this object of such sentimental importance is the one thing that ends up in the gutter.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of little things like that. Like the photo that Jimmy had of the Mesa Verde logo, the guy on the horse.
That was in a box.
It's in there somewhere. I get the feeling like he's keeping these trinkets from his past because he misses, like, you know, Kim or like the time that they spent together or something.
Yeah.
There's definitely like a feeling of, oh, he's collecting nostalgia items here.
I think I saw the visor from his first commercial shoot too.
Or
not his first commercial shoot, his first commercial shoot as someone from the TV station. But he wasn't.
Right. That makes sense.
Hmm.
They show us one of his cars too.
They do.
His only car, his Cadillac. White Caddy. I'm kind of surprised he didn't have more cars with a
house
like
waiting.
That.
You were waiting, you were waiting for the garage shot. Like, come on, show me the vehicles.
Which, because he probably had to have a lot of silly cars, right?
You would think. I mean, he always had a little bit of a bug up his butt about the Esteem.
Oh.
And how shitty it was.
Right.
He really hated that car, so you would think that that would expand into, just a huge garage full of cars, but maybe not.
And now he's driving just the worst, the ugliest, the most pedestrian and shitty car ever, the Ford Taurus.
Cam agrees with you.
Especially that, like, model, that curvy, ugh.
Yeah, bleh. It's gross.
I knew a lot of people with Ford Tauruses in the 90s, and they're ugly, ugly, terrible cars.
With useless trunks, yep.
Yep.
Agree. All right.
Oh, the one other thing before we leave the scene. There's an H.G. Wells time machine book in this scene that you can spy, and we see that show up later. We see it show up in episode 2, but in the episode 2 timeline, we're back in time. So we don't really know like the significance of the time machine book is going to have yet, but we've seen it both in the timeline of like Better Call Saul and also the timeline after Breaking Bad. So
nice.
It's going to be, I wonder if, like, if that will be significant to the Howard thing in some way. And it's like a souvenir of that conquest or that heist or whatever.
Maybe. Yeah. Good theory. I like it.
We'll see.
All right. Next, title sequence.
Yeah.
Then after that, we cut to Nacho fleeing Lalo's estate right where we left him in the last season. He's just running north through the desert. And that's his job.
For 2 episodes, yeah, pretty much.
This is the scene where he executes that amazing, like, full prey instinct dive into the, what would you call that?
A
ravine sort
of
thing?
A ditch.
Ditch, sure, ditch.
Yeah.
a gutter.
Slides right into the gutter.
A dirt gutter, yeah.
Which is hilarious to me because he's got this bright red shirt on. And I'm like, man, just roll around in the dirt or something for a bit.
Right, yes.
Just calm that red down a little bit because you did not blend in at all.
It's true. It's very true. And there's not, honestly, a whole lot more to say about that. He is on the run.
He still cares about regular people, right? That's one of the things he asks about when he makes this phone call.
He cares about them, but doesn't care about them enough to do anything about it. He just asks.
Yeah. I mean, he's always been kind of riding that line, right? He wants to be an honest criminal, I guess. It's the distinction between, like, what Mike says to... Is it... What's his name with the baseball cards and the car?
So Colin Robinson? That's his name.
No. No, it's, you know, that guy, Preston or Calvin, or he's got some shitty name, some just bad name.
Sorry if you have the same shitty name as it.
Prestons and Calvins everywhere. No, that guy, right, with the pills and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I was going with that.
What about him?
I've totally forgotten him. Okay. Oh, no, it's what Mike says to him about you can be a criminal and a good guy or a criminal and a bad guy, right? Like breaking the law doesn't necessarily mean you're bad.
Doesn't mean you're breaking morals.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like Nacho is that, right? He's the criminal with the heart of gold. It's cliche, but.
Yeah, no, that's definitely what they're going for with him.
Yeah.
I just don't buy it. I think it's BS.
I mean, if you compare him to Lalo, though, like...
Oh, for sure.
Especially in the next scene.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, in the next scene, we have Lalo collecting his body double.
Yes. Which apparently he has been building like a hobby project model for the last year. I don't know.
I don't know how long it takes to get extensive dental work, but that's what he had done. And as soon as he mentioned that in that scene, I'm like, oh, shit. You've been planning this for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so evil.
Yeah, as soon as he asked, like, the guy to, hey, keep the mustache and the soul patch. It looks great. When he's telling the guy to go shave his beard, I was like, oh, he's going to body double that guy. he's going to use him as the decoy body to make everybody think he's dead.
Yes, and it's
turned out
a very sad, very affecting. The way that they play it, making this couple seem just like very sweet, ordinary people who have benefited from his kindness, because he is, at least as long as you're not like a small boy or a teenage boy.
Yeah.
He's very nice to everybody around him. He's very charismatic.
And that's one of the things like... that I'm kind of talking about, you know, the difference between Nacho and Lalo. Lalo, I remember last season when he got to his family's house, he was like, oh, these are all my family and these are my people and like, come meet them and like be happy party, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you look at like, you can imagine him doing the same thing with this dude and his wife or whoever this is. And all he's doing that for is so that he will have a way out when things get too tough for him.
Yep.
Whereas I don't feel like Nacho does that. I feel like Nacho wants, you know, good people to stay that way and not be harmed by what he's doing.
It is more genuine for sure. Lalo, as much as he might genuinely like people, he definitely sees them as assets and tools.
Oh, yeah.
And he is not afraid to kill anybody in cold blood at all, apparently. I noticed throughout the course of the scene he keeps refusing food, and I swear to God I think that might be intentional. I think that's like some weird code of honor, some Game of Thrones type thing where like he doesn't want to accept bread and salt because he is about to visit so much misfortune.
Yeah, what is that called? Like
guest right.
Yeah,
some weird guess right stuff. Like,
yeah, that's a good point. I noticed that like subconsciously, but I didn't really piece it together what that might be. But
yeah,
that makes
and
sense.
He does seem, I don't know, he does seem at least a little bit regretful of this, but also he still did it, so
right,
still 100% psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
Right, next scene we are cutting to Kim and Jimmy at their apartment, where it seems mostly business as usual. They're getting ready for their days.
Because they think Lalo's dead.
Yeah.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. they got told last season that he was dead by Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy forced Mike to tell him what was going on.
Yeah, he said Lalo Salamanca will die tonight or whatever.
So that's the information they're going forward with. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy still seems a little, like, off his footing with Kim.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he can't sleep. And I notice Kim's, like, sleeping next to him just like a baby. Mm-hmm. No worries.
Yeah, she's feeling good about her plan.
And did I guess ever... Jimmy is going to let Kim borrow a suit for one of her clients. I feel like this is an important suit because later Jimmy says something like, I hope that suit brings you more luck than it did me. And I feel mm-hmm. like he might have been wearing it during, like, during like maybe his, well, what is it, rebarment? I don't know what the term is for getting your license reinstated, mm-hmm. but, or getting back on the bar.
I was going to ask you if you had done any more research to that effect.
No, I did not have time.
Of course, yeah.
I had to rewatch the episodes and all that stuff, but... I don't know. It's like a brown suit, and he doesn't wear a ton of brown suits anymore. Mm-hmm. He's more like crazy patterns and stuff.
Yeah, no, he's definitely out of his trying to look legit phase.
But it seemed significant.
It did. Also significant, it seems like Kim made sure Jimmy was watching whenever she threw out that lawyer mug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really know exactly what that means. I feel like it's some, you know, last vestige of their old life or something.
Or some small act of sort of rebellion on her part. Like,
or just, like, forget about the, you know, this was a dangerous, stupid, insane thing that mm-hmm. you did. Forget about all that.
Yeah, it's over
now. Because
we've
got all this money and...
Exactly.
And now we're just in that life.
Yep.
Or I guess they think they're out of it.
They think they're out of it for sure. Yeah. Next, we're cutting to who I would say is the breakout star of season 5. It's the macro ant.
Okay. Returning.
Returning yeah. star, the macro ant. And over the course of the scene, the cousins find Lalo's body double, and it seems like they buy it.
The macro finger, too. My God, they got... Those, close.
Yeah, those pores. I work under a microscope sometimes, so I'm used to seeing fingers like that. But yes, it must be very upsetting for normies like you.
Totally. Like, too much detail. No thank you.
I can see your pores. I don't like it. Let's move on. But it does look like the cousins have bought it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I already said that, didn't I?
Okay. Sure.
Okay, next scene. We're in the chicken trailer again.
Right.
Where Gus lives now. Juan Bolsa calls him and fills him in.
Yes. Juan is not sure who exactly did it, but he does know that Gus, that Nacho is a rat.
He knows that Nacho is a rat, and it seems through his tone that he is intimating to Gus that he is on his radar.
That maybe Gus is?
Or? Yeah, that Gus is.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
that was kind of the vibe I was getting from that call. He was like, now listen, we're in a very difficult time where nobody needs to do anything bad or crazy.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We definitely know that relationship goes places. In Breaking Bad, I think when we start off, they are kind of at each other's throats. I know eventually Gus sends in some people to visit Juan. Mm-hmm. Well, I won't talk too much about that. I don't really want to spoil Breaking Bad if you haven't seen it, but
boy,
it's hard not to talk about Breaking Bad with this show.
Yeah, I know it's definitely a thing where people have not seen Breaking Bad and they have watched Better Call Saul. To those people, I say, wow, I admire your whatever it is you have that made you make that decision.
And your restraint not to have watched it between seasons 5 and 6.
Yeah, that too.
This is definitely like this chicken trailer is the same one, you know, the same place that we see Gus meeting a lot of time in Breaking Bad
mm-hmm.
with Walt and Jesse and all those people.
But completely
like,
recreated, yeah.
I can't recall seeing it in Better Call Saul. yet, but I could be wrong about that.
I feel like I have seen it before in have Better you? Call Saul. Here's okay. the thing. I've watched the entire show in the last right? like 2 or 3 weeks. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you which season I saw it in, but it seems very familiar to me, and I've only seen Breaking Bad all the way through once. Yeah. So don't think it would be from that.
I don't know.
Mike is trying so hard still to get leniency for Nacho.
Yeah.
Give it up, man.
I mean, he realizes, like, he's the guy who said the thing about, like, good criminals, bad criminals. He knows Nacho's a good criminal, and feels bad for him because his dad's getting sucked into this. And, like, what choice did Nacho have, right? He got put between a rock and a hard place. And I think, you know, Mike feels for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out how to interpret and read Gus's stuff about Nacho having his respect. I think that does not necessarily mean that he won't kill Nacho.
Yeah.
Because I remember like how he dealt with Walt in Breaking Bad. Let's talk some more Breaking Bad.
All right, spoil that
for people who haven't seen
Absolutely.
it.
Absolutely.
Skip ahead like 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. I remember how he dealt with Walt, and he always respected Walt. I mean, Walt's cooking abilities, that's why he brought him in, right? And he tried to kill Walt multiple times because
because his cooking ability him, but was the only thing that was respectable about
right,
him.
Right. Yeah. And he had Gale, who kind of, you know, worked just as well as him eventually. But like, so Gus is not above killing people that he respects. I don't think that Nacho is safe just because
No way. What?
Mike is there to say, hey, you respect him, right?
Yeah, no, Gus is going to do what Gus is going to do. I don't know that Mike has that much of a say in it. And actually, at the end of the scene, I think personally, that is when this character decided that Nacho is expendable.
Yeah, could be.
Because there's some...
I mean, he's been wanting to kill him for a while.
Fair. I think the look on Gus's face at the end of this scene is setting up something that we see in the next episode in terms of throwing Nacho under the bus, basically.
Okay.
And that's all I'm going to say about that in this episode. Right. Next scene, we are cutting to the courthouse where Kim and Jimmy go their separate ways to dispense their own flavors of justice. Jimmy walks up on the Guzman prosecutors in the hallway. Willingly walks up to these people in the hallway.
After stealing himself for a second.
Sure.
And, you know, he slips right back into Saul Goodman mode, and it's fun to watch.
He does. It is fun. He shits the bed a little bit at the end. By dropping totally. The name Wallo. What?
Yeah.
He gets a little too worked up, I think.
Mm-hmm. And he tries to play it off, but that's got to come back to haunt him, right?
It's got to, yeah. I don't know how common of a nickname that is, but, I mean, among the Salamanca family. I don't know. I guess I just don't know how much of this family is known to, like, the DEA and the powers that be.
I don't know. They seem... Law enforcement seems somewhat familiar with the Salamancas. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I'm trying to remember what Hank and Gomi had to say when, you know, Crazy Eight was being interrogated. That's been a while. But yeah, it's a big mistake. It's a big slip up and he tries to cover up, but I don't know if it worked.
Jimmy also mentions the idea of prosecutorial misconduct in this conversation, and that kind of got my brain clicking a little bit. That got my attention, and I'm wondering if maybe that might be kind of the end game for Kim and Jimmy with regard to Howard.
In order to like get him disbarred, or
I think there may be some level of provocation. Like, I think the fact that they're going after Howard in ways that he would be able to see coming a mile off is very suspicious to me. And it makes me think.
So all this is not the trap. It's just the bait for the real trap.
I think so.
Could be.
My suspicion. It's my theory.
Yeah.
I'm sticking to it.
Definitely playing the long con, like I said.
Absolutely. Later that night, Jimmy meets Kim at the El Camino Diner after she's just spoken to some of her down on their luck clients.
Yeah, she's kind of brainstorming up the Saul Goodman image. Like,
she is,
all the things
yeah.
that we think of when we think of Saul Goodman.
This is where she gives him shit about his car, isn't it?
Right. Like, you're going to drive that shitty Taurus around.
Right.
Saul Goodman drives a Ford Taurus, a brown one. Yeah, I mean, that probably pushes him to getting the white caddy.
Mm-hmm.
I probably pushes him to getting a golden toilet, too. I don't know. And then Pillars made of gold. And
Plants the seed of the golden throne.
Yes. It was crazy to me, like, how much of Jimmy's, Saul's image was made by her. And you know, not the suits and stuff, right? He's already got that.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a flavor of his own, but she's kind of taking the image that he's built and running with it.
She is. She uses this wonderful phrase, the Cathedral of Justice. And that's exactly what his office ends up being, with the pillars and
totally.
The Constitution, all of it, 1,000%.
Yeah. And the name of this diner that they're in, this dining room, is El Camino,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously the name of the movie, the Breaking Bad movie, starring Jesse, that is a sequel to Breaking Bad, and I guess indirectly a sequel to this as well.
True.
And the El Camino, it just, like, this whole scenario is so ridiculous. It's because they're sitting here planning Howard's downfall, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I can just imagine, because this is not, like, a fancy dining room where Howard takes his meals and drinks
right.
and meetings with his clients, right? She's in some shitty motel dining room,
mm-hmm.
Probably off, like, a backwoods highway or whatever, a back desert highway for New Mexico. I just imagine, like, if Howard knew that this is where his demise was planned, like, he would just be so angry.
Insult to injury, absolutely.
Right.
Yes, insult to injury.
Yep.
It is pretty amazing. And it seems the way that this, talking about building on Saul Goodman's image and talking about her plan with Howard, it seems very much to me like she is trading her full support and building on the idea of Saul Goodman
mm-hmm.
for working on this plan to take Howard down with her.
Like, and trying to
she's trading her support for him
train?
For his support for her.
Oh.
Kind of a tit for tat thing.
I see what you're saying, yeah. Because she needs the sandpiper money as much as he does.
Yeah.
Like, if she wants to
run. Yeah,
because
she's quit her huge job, yeah.
Pro bono practice
mm-hmm.
full time. Yeah, she's going to need that money, so for sure. Yeah, she's jumping on board his train, and he's doing the same.
And that's at the end of the scene, I think, is when we see he's finally basically acquiescing to this mm-hmm. idea. Like, okay, I'll hear you out at least. Hearing doesn't hurt anything. Of course, we know how that goes.
Yeah, he does more than that by the end of this episode.
So much more, and it's wonderful. All right, the next time we see Nacho, he's in a culvert in the desert while the Federale pass overhead. He's
big
directed,
surprise, Nacho in a ditch.
Nacho in a ditch.
Big surprise.
It's a wet ditch this time. Ugh, nothing worse than a wet ditch. That's what I always say. He's directed to a safe place, and he settles in.
Right.
The world's cinder blockiest hotel is what I'll say, is how I'll say it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They give the name of this place later. It's on the sign. I didn't pick it up in this episode.
Is it the El Cotillo? Oh, Ocotillo?
Ocotillo, that sounds
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's told to wait a couple days, and just, like, that's it.
Easy.
Easy. Should be easy.
Turn on the TV.
Should
you're
be
good.
Easy. Yeah.
I could do 2 days standing on my head, no problem.
Without a smartphone?
Without a phone. I just turn on the TV, I'll sleep.
Did that place even have a TV? Didn't seem like the kind of place that would have a TV.
It might not have. I can't remember seeing one.
Maybe didn't have it. Definitely doesn't have a functional AC.
We didn't even get to see it in this episode, do we? Like, the inside of it?
The inside? What are you talking about? Yeah, totally.
Does he go in this
episode?
Yeah,
he goes in this scene.
All right.
He gets there and he goes in. And he's like, oh, wow, what a shithole. But I guess I have to stay here. And there's not a lot more to say about that. Again,
no.
It's a Nacho scene. We're just trying to get him in place for all the shit that goes down in the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
For now, we are cutting to Mike at Stacy's, playing shoots and marbles with Kaylee, and being grumpy.
Yeah, she's building this marble track. It's, you know, vertical marble roller coaster thing.
And he just insists that it'll never work.
Completely in the dark. Turn on a freaking light. Jesus,
that,
man.
Yeah.
Like you're trying to burn this kid's eyes out at 10 years old?
That was a big demand. Also, the lemonade. Did you see how much lemonade was left in that friggin' pitcher when they finally showed it? It was like, she'd had one glass, maybe.
That's the third pitcher she had.
Oh, is that the key? Did he make two new pitchers of lemonade over the course of the night? See, it's that stuff that they don't tell you.
But I mean, it's okay. It's so dark in this room, right? Like,
you're still.
It's not winter, so because Nacho's not wearing a jacket, it's not a problem. Although they're in the south, maybe it. But it's a desert. It gets freaking cold at night. If it was the winter, he'd be freezing. He'd be dying.
Yeah.
Hypothermia type stuff.
Totally.
So it's not getting dark super early, which means it's very late at night, and Mike is feeding this kid glass after glass of lemonade. You're never going to get this kid to sleep.
He's
trying. It's a terrible idea.
He's trying to train the Marble Master. It's the only way. Okay, it's the only way to do it. He has to keep her awake so she can keep that drive going.
Got to see gotta build through taller. The marble.
Got to see through
there
the marble.
There is no marble.
See where the marble is going to be, not where it is.
Gotcha.
All right. Anyway, now we get to the good stuff. We are cutting to Kim and Jimmy stalking Howard at the country club. About to lay the groundwork for their what I'm sure will end up being a terrible, terrible scheme.
Are we going to talk about the scheme? Like right now?
Yeah, we're here. We're in it, babe.
I'm kind of surprised that this is the plan. I mean, I'm always surprised by this is the plan.
Seems kind of basic, right?
Saul. It's not even that it's basic. It's that Jimmy intentionally gets seen here, as best I can tell. Or, you know, I'm not actually 100% sure that that's true. I have some theories about this scene. So they're expecting Howard and Cliff to be there. They're watching them on the golf course, and they're trying to get inside. And the whole idea of this scheme is they're going to get inside to Howard's locker. They're going to plant a little baggie of cocaine so that it will flop out onto the floor in front of Cliff and make Cliff question, like, oh, is Howard on drugs?
Right.
Question his reputation. So Jimmy goes in and he wants to get a tour of the place, the country club. And I think his plan when he walks into that place is to get the tour, to ask if he can use the bathroom or whatever, overflow the toilet, cause a scene, all the stuff he does once he gets in there, and then go plant the coke.
Right.
I think he calls an audible when Kevin shows up. I don't think he was expecting to see Kevin in there. When Kevin like comes at him, he's because you notice like the jig's almost up, right? He walks away and then he thinks better of it and turns around and tries again.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, there's a huge scene and all that stuff. But like, I don't think he expected to see Kevin in there.
Interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. Because on the one hand, I can totally see where you're coming from. But on the other hand, they're doing some stuff with his face when he came in that it seemed like he was preparing to be discriminated against in some way.
Okay.
And I don't know if he already had the Jew card stuff.
Maybe.
Percolating in the back of his head, or if it was, if he was just going to see what flavor of discrimination it was, like if he would be recognized. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting theory that he...
I'm not sure he expected Kevin. I don't know, but yeah, I mean, the stuff about like the anti-Semitism stuff is absolutely hilarious, made doubly hilarious when Kevin comes in and calls him McGill, right? Because you're like, this isn't even his name. He just made this up.
And he calls him money grubbing, which is a great thing to say to somebody who is...
Jimmy latches onto that. Kevin is pretty ineffectual here.
He's pretty ineffectual. It's fun to see him let off some steam, though.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
I like to see him get run around. It was some of the highlights of last season.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really, really love this scene. I love the, you know, after this whole anti-Semitism stuff and he asked to go to the bathroom, which is the second time he's pulled this exact trick. Just like, oh, all the stress, all the stuff, it's acting on my IBS. This time he says
diverticulitis,
I think is how you say it.
Yeah.
Right. So this time he uses a fake excuse of that, but he gets him in the bathroom again. Second time he's used toilet paper in inventive ways.
Well,
in these schemes.
I don't know. This is super inventive. He's clogging the toilet, man. It's not that serious.
Fair. It's not like he's the first person to come up with this.
Yeah, he's not writing a friggin', what was that, the letter that he wrote the first time?
Oh, yeah, the cease and desist or whatever it was. The
letter of warning that I'm about to pursue legal action against you. Yeah.
But it was absolutely hilarious. And I'm like, he comes out and he's like, oh, yeah, he's got a problem with the bathroom. It's the middle one. You can't miss it. I'm like, yeah, there's a mountain, a literal mountain. He unrolls like two
full
rolls.
Yeah, yeah.
And just jams it with his foot down this toilet. it.
Unnecessary.
To the point where you can't even see water, right? And,
right,
and
yeah.
The toilet paper that's on top isn't even wet,
it's
which
dry.
Means it's all been absorbed.
Yes. It's overkill, but it's pretty delightful overkill. But then I bet he's wishing he had those couple extra seconds when he gets out and he gets a text from Kim, abort!
Yeah.
Because for some reason, we don't know why, but Howard got called back inside. I wonder what that's about.
Mm.
Why did he come in early? Because he came in early. We see him. Kim's watching him. He gets a call. And his face, like, drops. And he goes back. And I really wonder what that was about.
Could be unrelated, but...
Could be unrelated.
Could also be something significant. I don't know.
Maybe Kevin called him. I don't know why. Those two have never talked. Have they? Yeah, they did.
They have.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
When Chuck was trying to represent them.
When Chuck was alive, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, very, very long time ago and very little contact.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Hadn't considered that. It's an interesting idea.
But I do. I love so much Jimmy's use of the bro code to escape notice here.
Totally. Yeah, and so he does the exact opposite thing you would think he would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost wonder, like, is this panic and him, like, calling an audible? I mean, it's definitely him calling an audible. He doesn't expect Howard and Cliff to come back this soon. But so what he does is, you know, Howard and Cliff are coming into the room. So real quick, he strips off his pants. He strips down to the bone. I mean, he's
bare-ass naked.
And he just sits there with a towel, like he's drying his hair.
With a dry towel.
To cover his face
hair.
So yeah. Howard won't know who he is.
And it's perfect.
And his ass is hanging out. It's hilarious. And I think this is why they put the nudity.
I think
warning.
So too. I don't think it was the paintings at the beginning in the mansion.
When I first saw the painting, it's like, are you kidding me?
You're gonna
give me a warning
too.
That a right. Renaissance style painting has nudity.
Oh, art! Art has
right?
nudity. Shocker.
But I think it was this. Actually.
It was definitely Bob Odenkirk's shiny white hiney.
But the bonus, I think, of this little twist in the plan. Is that he gets to be there.
He gets to hear exactly
to hear
how it goes
the
down.
Reactions and to see like his plan come mm-hmm. to fruition. Because he's almost never there when like
that's true.
He messes with people. I mean, occasionally he is, but also there are a lot of times when he isn't. And especially against Howard, I feel like he wants to be there. Although, I don't know, his mind is a little changed on Howard, you know?
Yeah, it does seem like he does not villainize Howard exactly the same way that Kim does, which is fair because Howard wasn't as honestly outright cruel to Jimmy as he was to Kim at different points in her career.
Totally.
He was a real piece of shit to her in season one. I had forgotten just how mean he was. Not very many times, but the times that it happened, it was like, wow.
Is it over like the Kettleman stuff and
so
losing
unprofessional.
That case,
yeah, and
or...
also Mesa Verde,
mm-hmm.
when she gets this amazing client for them, for HHM.
Right, and Chuck says, I guess she's out of the doghouse, and
we'll
see.
Yeah, and Howard's like, yeah, we'll see, and she's still just in that horrible basement room, whatever that is again.
Yeah.
Filing, she's doing paperwork.
Right.
For hours. Yeah, even after that, and I think that burned her ass pretty bad, and she still's not recovered from that.
Yeah, he wasn't always great to her, but he also had reasons sometimes, like with the Mesa Verde stuff, you know.
Yeah, and with her associating with
around.
Jimmy.
There's that,
even
too.
Even though he's, always doing shady stuff.
I do think that Howard is too smart to just, like, fall for this.
Yes.
I think, like, he's going to realize very quickly, A, someone is fucking with me, and mm-hmm. B, I know exactly who that is. It's the same guy who
same
I realized threw bowling balls over my gate and smashed my car. Sent hookers to lunch. Yeah.
Sorry, sex workers.
Yeah, sure. So I don't think he's going to be, like, bamboozled by this whole thing. I do think there will be a little bit of back and forth here.
That's what I'm thinking, too, because I'm right there with you. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
Like, who else would plant something on him?
Yeah, this is the opposite of subtle too. Like Kim wonders, you know, were we too subtle with this plan? And I'm thinking, no. If anything, like that's very not subtle. Like having Jimmy mm-hmm. make a scene, because that's the other thing.
That's
like
the other thing.
That's
yeah.
the reason I think that Kevin was an audible and not expected is because I don't think Jimmy wanted to be seen here by anybody who could connect him to the scene. Like would like really know who he is and his name and everything and talk to Howard. Because Kevin runs in the same circles as Howard does, apparently. Like, they're all in the same country club. And if next week Kevin goes up to Howard and is like, I saw that dumbass Jimmy in here trying to be whatever the other day. And he's like, oh, that day? That's the day that the Coke fell out of my locker. He's going to immediately connect the dots.
You would think. Yeah, you would think.
So I think Jimmy just wanted to get in and out without being seen. But
I have to think, the last time Jimmy really took somebody down, it was his brother. And he did it by basically pointing out that his brother hated him, essentially. So I have to wonder if this whole thing with him and Kevin in front of all these people, if that might actually end up helping him in the end, because he got somebody else, some other high-powered rich white man giving him shit.
Yeah, publicly. I think it does. Like, it's a really, if it is a pivot and he didn't expect it, it's a really good, smooth one.
Yeah.
you know, and it's a fun one, too.
So. It's a fun one.
Also, why do they use baby powder?
Because Jimmy's got stuff,
connections to the underworld. Like, he can call up Kate Beckinsale and get an eighth of Coke. That's how
underworld.
Coke works.
Got you. I see. Yeah. I see where you went there. I had to think about that one.
The
for criminal a
underworld, full of vampires and superheroes.
Trench coats.
Yeah. And he can get, you know, a gram of Coke or whatever he needs stick in his locker.
Which makes me.
Because they sniff it. If they just, like, if there was some on the outside and, like, they got their nose too close to it, you could smell baby powder.
Right.
But, like, the jig would be up. They would know, like, oh, somebody's messing with me. It's not just a thing that happened.
Yeah. I wonder, did Howard keep that? Did he just immediately throw it away because it looked weird? I mean, he's a lawyer, so I would hope that he would keep it. It's evidence, right?
Could be. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, why didn't they use the real stuff? I hope that comes into play at some point.
Probably because the writers thought it was cuter if it was baby powder.
Because it's Kim being in control of everything. So maybe she doesn't want to buy drugs.
I mean, go scrape the cash that Lalo gave you and you'll find enough coke to plant. Right? What's the thing in Scarface? It's like every... What is the thing they say about
cash? Is it every... Like, every dollar bill has a certain percentage of cocaine on it just because of the world.
All of it has been through drug cartels at some point. Yeah. Seriously. There's coke out there. You can find it. You can use it.
There's definitely... There's got to be more realistic... Coke replacements than baby powder, right?
Yeah.
At least pick something that doesn't smell. You're right. Dumb. but maybe not necessary.
We'll see.
Maybe they guessed correctly. Right. Final scene. We meet up with Lalo on his way back over the border. But one tortured phone call later, he decides he's not going after all. And he goes back south.
This is... So he calls up... Hector.
Don Hector.
And Hector's like, puerda, or whatever the Spanish word for proof is.
Yeah, it was P-R-U. They got that far. And then Lalo was like, oh, I'm going to make some guesses here. Yeah. Thank God.
Right. How freaking tedious. I mean, this is before the board, even, where you could at least, like, kind of run your finger past it and a little faster. Or what? That was the mechanic, right? God, I don't remember how he communicated in Breaking Bad other than shitting in his pants.
It was just the bell, I think, right?
No,
did
there was
he
some...
have more?
Oh. I mean, he did have a bell, but when he was communicating with people who were at the hospital, I think he was using a board or something.
Letters on it. Didn't have the eyeball technology.
Oh, like the Stephen Hawking stuff, yeah. I don't know. So yeah, he calls up Hector, and Hector, like, somehow knows that there's proof that Gus was involved in this, and I don't, for the life of me, know what it is. Like, either the writers, either it's something we haven't seen that will make sense once we see it, or the writers have remembered something so minuscule and so clever that I just didn't pick up on it as a viewer.
I wonder if he might be overthinking it a little bit, because they...
Or it's so obvious that it's, hidden in plain sight, maybe.
Well, so here's the thing. The first scene that is back at Lalo's hacienda, the camera spends a little bit of time on that lock and the liquor glasses.
Yeah.
And then later in the, I'm going to keep calling it the thing that I forgot what I call it, the chicken trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Later on in the chicken trailer, when all the evidence, like the photographic evidence, is laid out, that fucking lock is there again.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's probably the only thing they have, but I don't think that they're trying to make a case to, like, the cops or anything. I think they're just trying to throw enough doubt toward Juan Bolsa and Don Eladio that they are willing to go along with the plan of Nixon, Gus, and his whole thing.
Hmm. Okay.
We know it doesn't work.
I just don't know what ties it to Gus inherently. Like, even if you could tie it to Nacho, I mean, Nacho is the thing that ties it to Gus. I mean, that's, and we're going to talk about that next episode significantly, but like, yeah, if they get Nacho, he's the only one who knows that this was connected to Gus. So like, who isn't, you know, directly working for him.
Right.
I just don't think a lock proves anything. I don't think a glass of whiskey proves anything. Like, none of that's going to prove to Eladio that Gus was behind this.
Yeah, no, that's
like
fair.
What, chicken bones at the scene? Like eating chicken wings? See? Tasted.
Spice curls.
Right, the spice curls.
A lot of spice curls.
These aren't even released yet.
Look at this one. I call it baby. And this one's scary.
Oh my god. Spice corals.
Corals.
Wow. I did not expect to end this podcast with a Spice Girls joke, but here we are.
Oh, that's what you get for podcasting with me, my dear.
I gotta say, one other thing about this scene. So he's going to look for evidence to link it to Gus, but also, when he calls Hector, when the person answers the phone and says, like, this is wherever, he addresses them in Spanish. And I think this is his way to determine whether or not the person that's going to be holding the phone for Hector
good point.
Could understand what he's saying in case they were listening.
Yeah.
In.
That's nice. I think, because
then they're like, oh, we can get somebody who speaks Spanish for you. He's like, No. And
no, please don't, actually.
And then proceeds to speak Spanish to Hector. So I think...
Yeah. I think you're right.
I think he's trying to just make sure one more layer of safety here that somebody isn't going to hear anything weird.
It's subtle. It's good. Makes me wonder why we spent any time at all earlier in the episode with anybody thinking that Lalo was dead, because by the end of this episode, Don Hector already knows that he's alive again.
Right.
So like, why even have the cousins or the nephews? Yes, both. They're both. But it's fine. We got to see their shiny
shirts
again.
We have to see, like, the aftermath, I guess, of it. What it is to point out that there's a body double there. So maybe the authorities might think he's dead.
Yeah.
The federales or whoever.
Yeah, just more of an establishing shot than anything else.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Boy, these poor, yeah, right, these coyotes did not know what they were in for.
Oh, right, because that's the other part of this, right?
That is the other part of this. It's more murder. This. More murder.
Yeah.
More casual murder. Yep.
Well, I mean, they probably deserved it. They wouldn't give him his money back. I feel like they were ripping him off.
Yeah, probably they're also maybe helping people escape gang violence, too.
Yeah.
So there's that. I feel bad for those people in the truck.
Yeah, they're I mean, they get their money back, but
they do get their money back.
We're probably counting on, they probably have people waiting for them on the other side, maybe. They might have, like, really bad situations that they have to go back to now that they thought they were out of.
Exactly, yeah.
They got to find a new hookup to get them across the border.
That
like,
alone
that's probably not easy.
Yeah, I mean, how many towns was this one group of people servicing? We'll never know.
Yeah.
And Lalo just took out that whole chain of everything for his own nefarious ends.
He's leaving a path of wreckage behind him.
He sure is. Path a mile wide. Man is not subtle.
Nope.
Smart, but not subtle.
Anyway, that's episode one.
That's
We've got a whole
other
episode to cover. These aired on the same night. If you're listening to this in 2283,
Wow.
I've been dead for exactly 8 years.
Anybody still give a shit about podcasts in 2283? I cannot imagine that that would be the case.
I don't know. Are we using anything from 260 years ago? No. Running water.
I can't even. That's what I'm trying to remember. What existed 260 years ago? Nothing.
Nothing. Dirt. Trains, I guess.
Pets.
Not even trains.
Animals.
All right. Anyway, that'll be it for this episode. We will see you guys next time. If you want to send in feedback, we're not doing feedback on this episode because
logistics.
There are two for this week. We're going to be considering all feedback at bcs@baldmove.com for those who are interested in sending in their thoughts. Let us know what you thought about the episodes. Let us know if we got anything wrong, got anything right. If you can connect the dots on when Saul wore that suit, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, because that's going to take a bit of research to figure out a cloud source. Crowdsource that.
Or cloud source.
Or cloud source it.
We're all the cloud. We're all part of the cloud. We are the cloud.
That's true.
We are cloud.
I guess that's it. So we'll see you guys here in like 5 seconds when you click over to the next podcast.
Because you're definitely, you're going to do that, right? You're just going to listen to the next one? Yeah? You're going to do that?
Obviously.
All right, cool. Bye.
I mean, we were so good here that of course they are. Anyway, we'll see you guys next time. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
See ya.